Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast to tell you about my friends over at Gaslight. Find them at the corner of Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard right there in the hill in St. Louis, Missouri. It's just a really cool hangout over there. If you haven't been by yet, it's a really unique experience. You can either record in the studio if you have a band or you are a performing artist, and then your friends or fans can hang out at the bar side and watch you record. Or even if you're not performing as a fan, it's a lot of fun just to hang out and watch one of your favorite groups in there. So it's a real fun thing. I would highly encourage you to come check it out. It's nothing like you've ever been a part of. So a lot of really cool events coming up over there on October 16th, Sunday. They're doing a songwriter session with a couple of friends from the show, including Joe Bozzelli, Anthony Doria, and today's guest, Benji Wade. And then on October 28th, James Legg will be in studio, so that'll be a lot of fun too. So come check those out. Full listing of events and details over at GaslightSTL.com. Be sure to follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. Also want to welcome back sponsoring the show, Music Record Shop. They recently relocated to 3526 Washington Avenue. And they got a brand new location over there and new everything. So come check it out. They got a lot of great things going on. New records, of course, every Friday. And also coming up October 29th, live in store from Lucas Jack. So mark that on the calendar, October 29th. So follow them online, musicrecordshop.com, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And get out there and get involved. Support local music.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
What's up, guys? This is Benji Wade, and you are listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out today with Benji Wade Mantle. Welcome to the show, my friend.
What's up?
I feel like I repeat the same thing a lot doing the show, which is probably a good thing. I feel like the show is evolved a lot recently and branched out farther and farther, and more people are wanting to get involved, and I'm meeting new people and connecting the dots and all this, and leads me to guys like yourself where, like, you know, we know of each other a little bit. We usually run into each other at Oyster Bar or something where there's a band playing, and so it's hard to really have a nice conversation when you're trying not to talk over the music the whole time. And so these are, for me, the podcast is a great way to take interesting people out of the bar setting and get to hang out in a nice quiet, here in your living room tonight, and get to actually know each other a little bit better. So
yeah, no, and that's one thing that I can definitely say I appreciate about the podcast even is, you kind of came to me about it, you know. Yeah. That was the first and foremost, like I was, you know, kind of talking about earlier, you know, this is a very real thing, and I really do appreciate being a part of this any means, so thank you very much.
Sure, Dan. Yeah, I'm excited. I like I said, we kind of knew each other a little bit, and then I learned you played, and I was like, well, yeah, man, let's set up something, and let's hear some of these tunes, and but yeah, man, I thought it was funny, you were just telling me off mic, the name Mantle, that you are a relative of one Mickey Mantle, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. The good old New York outfielder.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Yankee, man.
Sure. I get
I'm sure you hear, but I deal with the same thing too. Being Presley, you know, everybody wants to ask me.
I didn't even think about that, to be honest.
Yeah, everybody wants to ask me if I'm related to Elvis and all that kind of stuff. And,
well, being related to Mickey Mantle, like, it's not like, especially baseball player. It's not, especially being in a music scene.
Yeah,
like Presley, I could certainly see that. Sure. Like Mantle, nobody's like, oh, the Mick.
Yeah,
like that was my principal in high school or middle school. Actually, he was like, the Mick, and I was like, yeah, actually, best friend ever since. You know, right. Like, so it was, you know, but I can understand that for sure. But yeah. Yeah,
my grandma used to like try to tell me that I look like him and all this, and I was like okay, grandma. Like, you know, like,
no, I mean, when you say it, like, I'm kind of looking at you like, yeah. All right.
Well, I think the sideburns, the black hair, you know, or having darker hair, and I don't know, but yeah, there might be some similarities, but I don't see it.
Are you related to him?
I imagine there's like something. I don't really have the family tree. I don't really know exactly where we're at or whatever. But I mean, Presley's not incredibly common. I'm sure.
Right.
I'm sure we're somewhere related down the line.
Yeah, totally. Well, and that's the one thing that is cool. Like me even bringing it up ever is that like I have the family tree.
Right.
Like, my grandfather, he passed away about a year ago now, and he actually had like a pamphlet of our entire family tree from him. I'm not in it necessarily, but it does go back. So with him having the family tree, my grandfather's grandpa and Mickey Mantle's grandpa, they were brothers.
Yeah.
So Mickey Mantle is my fourth cousin, which is, you know, very distant. You know, I never met the dude. Yeah. Like, but like, you know, with the music thing, what I look forward to at all is, like, you know, it is cool to have kind of a name of some sort, I guess, yeah, without the spectacle. But when people Google like Mantle, like I want to be like the next one, like Mickey Mantle, the famous baseball player. And like,
did you mean Benji Wade Mantle?
Yeah, Benji Wade. Yeah, of course.
Google spitting that out there for you. But yeah, man, that would be cool. Yeah, hopefully you get there. That's kind of the cool thing about this podcast too. It might help with that because for whatever reason, algorithms or whatever. But Google help, you know, when people search for you, usually the podcast comes up there pretty quick and all that stuff. So anyway, so it might help with all that stuff
too. Yeah, most definitely. And that, you know, and that's the thing, you know, is with just the Mantle name, like. Yeah. But also, what's fun, you know, when friends come over and they're like, "No way!" I'm like, I can show, you know, I have news clippings hanging on the wall that's like, Mantle could have. He was supposed to play for the Browns, the St. Louis Browns, but ended up going to the Yankees, you know. So, you know, of course, we all know what happened from there. But yeah, he was supposed to carry the name in St. Louis at first. He is from Missouri. Like, it's funny looking at some of my grandparents' fucking family videos, because like it's his aunt who raised him, just like standing there, just dead looking, scary. But it's just cool. It's like that's the lady who raised Mickey Mantle, and that's like my family. You know, video. It's awesome. So
yeah,
feels good to be a part of it.
Sure, definitely. So you, even with that, we also have in common. We come from around the same area.
Yes.
We've been talking here before, you know, before getting started, but we have a lot of other similar circles.
Unfamiliar connections, actually. Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. Like, I mean, that's one of my favorite things, the whole, you know, whatever, 7 degrees of separation kind of thing.
And, yeah. Well, like you were saying earlier, you know, connecting the dots and everything. Like, that's many more dots are connected
definitely,
now.
So you grew up in Troy, Missouri area?
Yeah, well, that's where I went to high school.
Yeah.
I lived in Hazelwood until I was 8, so I couldn't recollect much from there. Fucking after that was Troy, and then went to Hawk Point, which even in Hawk Point was such a little town that we went to school in Troy.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I say, you know, I grew up in Troy, but literally from this little ass town called Hog Point, like a quarter mile long and wide, and but it, you know, here I am now.
I born and raised in Wentzville area. I've been out there. I'm like my home now is probably, you know, 2 miles from the the house I grew up in. So I haven't ventured too far off. Yeah. So.
Gotcha.
I like it out there though. It's, you know.
No, and I appreciate it very much. Like, if you know, without that, I wouldn't be me.
Yeah.
So I mean, I can, you know, of course, there's times like. It's like, wow, that sucked. Sure. You know what I mean? In such little towns like that, like, there's just so many people, and you get so comfortable, you know, in little towns like that because it's just what you know. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody knows each other. Like, why would you want to go somewhere where nobody knows you? You know, just like the Cheers song, yeah. You know, go where everybody knows your name. Sure. Like, that, you know, that's a good feeling when people are like, yay, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't go to the gas station without running into somebody there, so...
Exactly, and, you know, and that's... And I love that, you know, right. I appreciated it very much, like... But I just had always seen something more, yeah. You know, and that was, like, even without, like, proper training of any sort or any, like, directional outlook outside of that. Like, you know, my parents... my mom, you know, kind of a beautiful woman, great person, but kind of an emotional wreck, you know, like, so the kids weren't the first priority other than a relationship and stuff, so she was comfortable, and we were just kind of tossed into situations. My dad was just never really a part of the picture, so I never had, like, a male direction. So now I'm, you know, just this mama's boy kind of, you know, that...
Yeah.
Is just so more outgoing. Like, my parents are like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, like, this is nothing like what we were doing, you know. But also, it's just, you know, the way that music came to me, even in these little towns, like, I wouldn't be playing music right now. There would be no need for this interview right now, yeah. You know, without those moments. So it's the most beautiful thing, you know, like, that at least keep to heart, you know, without regretting or resenting those places, sure. You know, like many people do, you know.
So when do you get started in the music scene then?
Well, in the music scene itself, it was right at my freshman year of high school. I grew, you know, like I said, we grew up in those little towns. There was this particular band called Grip who grew up in Hawk Point and Troy. They practice in Hawk Point. There was one night that I was at the ball field on the other end of town, which, like I said, is a quarter mile long, quarter mile wide, you know. So, yeah. Like, I hear the sound in the distance, you know. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what is that? You know, I'm not even thinking, like, music or, you know, I'm just, like, completely blind. I just hear it, and I'm like, oh, I got to get closer, you know. So, like, I literally follow it down towards my house. Like, if you would have went three blocks forward from where I turned, that was my place. I made a right, walked down about a block, and there was this little shack building fucking next to a farmhouse. All this music was coming from. I couldn't even tell you, like what it did to me at that moment. Like, it was just, like, hearing these sounds, just, like, music, you know, because I never looked at music, so... deeply or anything like that. And then that moment, standing in front of this building just kind of by myself, it was just very euphoric, you yeah. know, this sound. I was like, wow, that's cool, you know. And then it ended up my mom's boyfriend at the time did roofs, so I was, you know, I worked with him after work and stuff, and a couple of guys from this band actually worked for him. So, like, I'm standing on a roof, you know, tearing up shingles and shit, and these two guys are over there doing the same thing, but standing by each other talking, blah, 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 and I'm, like, looking at them, like, you know, like, gaze, just like, oh, my gosh, like, look at these guys. I'm looking so up to them, you know, yeah. Like, they're, like, angels or something. And, I mean, the music was beautiful, you know, for as heavy as it was. So, a couple years go by, I get into the band, in Grip, and, I just ended up, you know, going out to all the shows, ended up kind of being a roadie in a sense, you know, like, they're all like, oh, you're from Hawk Point? Yeah, come on, you know, we all knew people together just like us, you know, and then ends up one of the guys, Corey Holbrook, fucking came into play, like, took me under his wing and taught me, you know, showed me the way, really, like, this dude if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be playing music either.
Yeah.
But yeah, so once the music started, once the grip was going, he knew that I was playing the songs. He knew that I knew them. They lost their bassist, had me come in and play bass. And that was the first moment of music that I really experienced. So after that, you know, we're playing the Pit in Wentzville. Yeah. A lot. We were very popular there. That's, you know, kind of what kept the place going for a while, we all felt. But all these dudes are 5-6 years older than me. So I'm just this little guy just hanging out, like trying to be mature and be fun, you know, but also having the greatest fucking time of my life. Like,
yeah, man.
So it's kind of where it all started, you know, or at least what instilled the inspiration of, like, the want and feeling of, like, what people get from music. Like, because when I seen those guys, I was like, I want to make people feel the way that I feel when I'm listening to this. Like, yeah, this is the greatest thing ever to me, so.
I don't know. I have a ton of memories of the Pit, but I do remember seeing, like, high school, again, you're right with you, like, high school bands of my buddies were in and stuff playing over there. And but yeah, man, it was always a pretty wild night over there. And
yeah, I mean, and that was what was cool about the place. Like, me being so young and in high school, so all those guys were out of high school. It was a place, like, wasn't, they had the bar sectioned off, but all ages more or less. Mm-hmm. So, like, we could get all my friends from high school and stuff. Like, those guys started the band in high school, and it was just kind of whatever. By the time I was in high school and I became a part of the band, they were some, you know, like, in the area, they were something, you know. They were playing in St. Louis all the time, like, and from Troy, so it was looked up to very much, and I, like, lived a rock star life in high school. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, from middle school, which was kind of tough, you know. Sure. It was, like, kind of a segregated kind of thing. Like, then the music came, and now everybody's like, oh, yeah, you know. So I was, like, middleman with a lot of things, you know, a lot of people. It was, felt good to be part of everybody's kind of clique rather than just, like, my own. And it was only because I played music, you know. Like, it was, like...
Yeah, I don't know where it changed or whatever, but I do remember that exact moment, you know, that feeling of in high school when they're like, yeah, you're like, oh, yeah, hey, Benji's got a band. We should go see him, you know. It's like... And, like, that, I don't know, it's rare these days. You know, I mean, everybody still has those bands,
right,
but there's not, like, the whole, you know, the excitement of being in high school anymore, going to see your band. I mean, I know we're all adults. We all got, you know, children and spouses and, you know, whatever other things that, but it's like, but, you know, man, it's, like, so hard sometimes to get people to come out to a show anymore.
Well, what was super awesome, you know, all my buddies in high school, we were going to these shows together. Excited as fuck, you know, like, a grip show tonight, you know. And then it turned into, like, I was in the band and they were coming to my shows, you know. So, like, it was, man, just such a turning point in my life, you know, musically, emotionally. Like, it was amazing.
So when do you kind of evolve from grip and doing your own stuff? Like, when's that kind of get rolling?
Okay, so again, Corey Holbrook, I can say my best friend, the godfather of my child, you know, like, my homie. This dude, you know, got me into the band and stuff. Like, there was a moment, you know, and, like, at the time, I'm just playing bass, you know, I'm not even that important part of the band. Like, he's like, we're sitting there listening to some recordings of Grip, and he's like, dude, you know, we got into a deep conversation. He's like, looks at me, says, dude, no matter what, you're going to do something. And I'm like, all right. You know what I mean? I'm like 15, 16 years old at the time. I'm like, cool, whatever, you know. Well, you know, here comes fucking 10 years later, like, the same dude. Like, just get a little deeper here. You know, Haney, our friend Justin Haney, he, you know, is the stage manager for Aaron Kim and the One Drops. So this dude, you know, grew up in Warrenton, which is about 10 minutes from Wentzville even, and then 10 minutes from Hawk Point and Troy.
Yeah.
We all grew up playing in metal bands, separate metal bands, you know, but playing shows together and stuff, like, but, you know, created a friendship that lasted, and then he started working for the One Drops, and Corey went to a show, a couple other people, and Corey was like, dude, you gotta check these guys out. So we go out, I check them out, and it was just like an utter, I mean, it was literally a 90-degree turn in my life, because at the time I had so much to say, I felt, you know, like in my mind, just what I questioned of life, period, like, and musically, like, at the time I was only playing guitar, writing riffs. I never had written a song vocally, trying to explain myself or express myself, for that matter. But then I see these guys and see it on a local level, and just like I was saying, you know, to see music and get this feeling, like, it was the same thing, like, oh my gosh, like, I want to give this, you know, yeah. Like, this is, so, you know, Aaron Cam and the One Drops was a huge, huge thing for, like, the reggae style that I went into from a very heavy background, you know, like, I grew up, Deftones is still my favorite band, but has always been, you know, like, I don't take away from that at all, but I know where I'm, like, where my niche is now, yeah. Like, to be able to express my feelings, my concerns, you know, in any way, like, mm-hmm. are just these little 3 to 5 minute songs that...
For sure.
Yeah. So without that band, though, like, and then one of the singers was of Grip. Was who I would look at times, and him sitting and playing acoustic at a bonfire and just making people laugh and cry and all. I'm like, I have to make people feel like this. Like, this is amazing. Like, I don't like sitting here just watching all this happen. Like, I want to do that, man. You know? So here I am.
Yeah, let's hear one of them, man. What you got?
Well, I guess coming up with all the beginnings here, this was actually the first song that I wrote. At the time period, I was kind of going through a lot. Like, I had started a heavier band called Subject to Change. The name right there, I lived by, you know, like, it was Subject to Change. Like, I knew I was in a growing state. All my buddies were, like, we could do anything with even just under this name. Well, then they're like, I guess at the time I was going in a direction they weren't. They all quit, started another band without me.
Yeah.
And literally, at that time, the worst thing I'd ever gone through. Like, I emotionally and all that, like, I didn't know how to, like, release it. I was just, like, losing my mind. So I went and bought a notebook, just started writing how I felt, blah, 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 you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was listening to a lot of Jack Johnson at the time, too. Banana Pancakes was my shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I learned that song, and I, like, for some reason, it kind of helped me branch off into something. And I started a melody, was able to go back to my notebook and put all these words in. So, all
right.
So that turned into this song, which is called All I Know. Thank you. too old is not too old to never grow. Some clarity to see that life will soon be free.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Sounded good.
Jazz hands.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned Deftones, and we're surrounded by quite a few Deftones posters and
yes,
stuff, man.
Yes.
You ever get? How many times you get to see them live?
I've seen the Deftones live in St. Louis and a couple other spread like Columbia and Red Rocks.
Nice.
But literally every time they've been to St. Louis, every time since 2006.
I went to the one. I'm a big Alice in Chains fan.
The black. What was that?
Black Eyed Diamonds or somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
It was them, Mastodon, and...
Yep.
Yeah,
so. Yes. No, I was
that,
there.
That was a killer show. Oh, yeah, we got, like, on the floor, or, like, 10 feet back from the stage or something like that, and, like, just an incredible night, man. And, like, but,
Yeah, I mean, the Deftones could put out an opera CD, and I would still love it, like...
Yeah. How's Red Rocks, man? I still haven't ever been over there.
In particular, it was what made it so special is that my other top like three, or basically my top two bands, Incubus and Deftones, like played that show together.
Yeah.
So like, and ended up like good thanks to my good friend, you know, Scott Haskenhoff. He fucking hooked us up with tickets. We were only 15th row from the stage. You know, and I'd never even been to Colorado. Like, that's the furthest I've been out of Missouri, you know. Right. So it was, I mean, for those two bands to play at that moment, like, it's hard to just explain how the Deftones were, because really it was just all one beautiful just thing.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've been, it's kind of a bucket list thing for me to get over there, get over to Red Rocks. There was one in particular, you're talking about the two bands together. It was one that caught my attention. It was J.J. Gray and Mofro with Michael Fronte. And, like, man, I was like, God, I wish, I'm so disappointed. That's, like, the show that I, you know, I would have loved to have been at that show.
Yeah.
I love both of them individually, but to see them at the same time,
right,
same show, at Red Rocks.
Exactly.
I was like, man, we would...
Right.
Blew my mind.
Well, what was even more badass was two nights before the Red Rocks show, they did their on the tour was in St. Louis.
Yeah.
So I got to see Incubus and Deftones on the same day.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, same day, but at Red Rocks. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was just like, oh my fucking God.
I did that with Mofro. It was a little bit different because I went to... Last time they rolled through town, I went to see them in Kansas City on a Thursday. My friend Jimbo, Ballesteros, went with me.
And, what's up, buddy?
Yeah, man. Hey, he's doing his work, spreading the love for Rock Paper Podcast up in the Northwest now. So hopefully, get an influx of downloads. Up that way.
Yeah, and a shout out to Garrett Johnson, who is even the dot that connects Jimbo and I.
Yeah.
So, which is, Garrett taught me to tattoo, and
very cool.
Jimbo apprenticed with him for a little while as well.
Yeah.
And he's over in San Diego, so.
Nice. But we went to see Mofro there, and Knuckleheads in Kansas City, and then Friday I already had plans to go see another guy, Will Hoag, in St. Louis, but I went, Will didn't start till like 9. So I was like, well, I'm going to run over to the pageant. Mofro and Anderson East were there at the pageant. So I watched Anderson East, his openers, set twice, Thursday and Friday night. So that was pretty cool, getting to see back-to-back shows.
And that's, it's hard to explain.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's just like all this is a feeling that you just believe in.
Yeah, definitely. Man. Yeah. So. And that guy, Anderson, man, he's just blowing up, ticking. He's on a rocket.
Yeah, I wish I could. I'm just not familiar to be 100%.
Yeah, he's more soul kind of, you know, singer songwriter soul stuff. He's got a lot of that influence in there. Like I went to go see him the other night. He was in town on Saturday, and it sounded really great. The vocals and everything, you know, the band sounded really tight. My only criticism would be that he did a lot of covers.
And oh, yeah.
I don't know that... maybe he just doesn't have all the original material yet to be a headliner, so he had to kind of stretch a little bit. But he did do one that really shocked me. I never guessed it, but he did "Always Be My Baby" from Mariah Carey.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So like, that as like a '60s soul song kind of thing, and
that is fucking my best friend Corey and I. That is like our song.
Yeah, yeah, man.
You know, like if we ain't even gay, yeah. But if we were gay, that's like our dude. You know what I mean? And "Always Be My Baby" is literally our fucking song. That's hilarious.
So yeah, man. But so he did this like real cool arrangement on it with a saxophone and a trumpet player and stuff. So
awesome.
Anyway, it sounded really nice.
Awesome.
But then he also did like Faces song and he did Sam and Dave's "Hold On, I'm Coming" and a bunch of these like, you know, kind of standard soul songs like that.
Well, see, covers I definitely see as an importance for sure. Like
sure.
That's
yeah, I mean. A well-placed cover is really great, but when you're doing five or six of them in a night, like
yeah, see the,
that's where it got too much. Like,
see, I use the covers as like a little pepper in it, you know, like you get all the originals, and then I got like three, maybe four, depending on the time of the show, you know, that, you know, because like, I mean, for one, I do a Michael Jackson cover, and then I do Royals from Lord.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
What are you doing?
So, which are both like... you know, very popular songs in their own sense.
Yeah.
But if nobody's paying attention to what I'm doing, like, once I play those songs,
they're
like,
sure.
Wait.
Yeah.
Let me check that out again.
Well,
you know?
And if you're playing a bar or any of that kind of stuff, I mean, definitely going to do more covers to keep the crowd interested
stuff.
But it's like you're saying, it's a good way to, you know, because sometimes
relate with the crowd. Like.
Yeah, some of your originals might be kind of considered background noise at a time for somebody that's not there for the music.
Exactly.
But when you hear them, like, holy shit, is that guy doing Michael Jackson over here?
Exactly.
And
that's exactly
so,
it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, and it's fun for me. You know what I mean? Like I love doing it. Like it's not like I use that necessarily as a tool. I've just. After playing it for so long, that's exactly what happens. Like, you know, I see people while I'm playing, they're kind of like, whatever, at an open mic or something.
Yeah.
Once I play that song, or Royals, or, you know, a Lumineer song, people are just like, wait, what the fuck just happened, you know? Like, and that's, you know, so it's fun to have, like, and, you know, I kind of put them in my own sense, too. So that's...
Yeah, definitely.
It's cool when people walk up and they're like, I like your version of Royals better than the original.
Yeah.
And I'm like... fuck yeah, you know, like, that's what's up.
there's a couple of groups, man, like, that like, Obadiah Parker, you ever heard that name?
I can't say it.
They do a cover of, Hey Ya from Outkast.
Oh, that's one I've always wanted to do,
and
but
it's like a
it's
real
hard.
Cool, like, folk arrangement on it.
A folk one?
Yeah.
That's, like, see, if I were to do it, it'd be like a little reggae.
Yeah.
That's...
It sounds really cool, though. Like, but there, you know, it's like, that's really the only song I really know by him, but it's like...
By Outkast?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm saying Obadiah.
Oh, okay. Oh, gotcha.
Is their cover. So that's the other thing, is the fact that, like, only being known for that one cover, you know, like, that's what, you have to break away from that to work, but...
Exactly, no, and that's one thing with what I have to offer, I guess, musically, is that, you know, I'm very confident, you know, and really, when I go to a show or any show, I can look at a crowd in a sense and kind of, like, know where I need to, you know, make my plays, like, where, you know, a lot of time I'll come with a set list, but... You know, then you see how people are vibing and shit. You know, you see if people are kind of like, oh, whatever. And it's like, okay, it's time to pull out some MJ.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
like, I went to see Amos Lee the other night at the pageant, man. The guy is just incredible. Such a voice and a singer-song, beautiful singer-songwriter. Just one of my favorites. But he, the pageant was just a great show. But he, even in that, like, you know, you're saying... he had a set list, and I saw a set list after the show because one of my friends got it off the stage.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, it's kind of a guideline, but he definitely switches it up.
Yeah.
You know, and like, there was one part where he's like, yeah, we're going to play Colors. He's like, you guys want to do Colors? You know, and, like, looked around, and then, like, He's like, yeah, we haven't played this yet on tour yet, but we're, you know, the band quickly picked it up, and you know, just like it's so cool to see pros like that that you know just you know, are
just
even
wing
you know,
it,
yeah,
like.
Just even having fun with it, and like you know, it's not so set and strict and
yeah.
And,
well, and somebody like you as a true fan, you know, you see that they're like they're getting a different vibe. They're like,
yeah.
We're going to do this instead, or you know what I mean? But yeah, you know, like Deftones, though, like sure. You go to one of their shows, and that's a pretty cookie cutter, like to the set list at least, you know. But that's just that style, like Amos Lee, stuff like that, you know, where it's kind of more free vibe and you know, stuff like that, or reggae, even like, you have that room to, you know, feel the crowd and you know, vibe off of that, which is, you know, creates a better experience for you and the, you know, fan at the same time, you know. So it's that's amazing, you know, that you can, you know, separate those things.
Yeah. One of the coolest parts of that show for me, the Amos show, was the dynamic that he brought into the show was like, like, I mean, the full band just killed it. They sounded incredible. But the band left the stage and he did a couple the solo acoustic, and then the band joined him back on stage and they brought out a single mic. And they sat in the middle of the stage, and the band joined around the around that mic, kind of like a bonfire vibe. You know, they all kind of leaned in and did their solos and stuff. And then, and that was like so cool, like kind of like, you know, the Pageant obviously still a smaller theater, but like
one of the most intimate. Though.
Yeah, but that performance, like being that single mic performance, like brings everybody in. It makes that Pageant feel like you're in a small bar.
Most definitely,
yeah, like it's such a. Such a cool experience to play with people like that, and like, and then of course, like I said, brought the band back out, and they all jammed and got loud again. But it was just awesome. Like you know, there was a point where you could like hear a pin drop in there, probably because it was like everybody's silent, everybody just watching
from
the show.
That fan sense, man. That's that's where why I look at my music is like like I was saying, like I want to feel the way that or I want to make people feel the way that I'm feeling. You know, I seen the Way Down Yonders, and it was the same thing, you know, this kind of folky thing, but they all did a song, you know, where it was just kind of everybody on this one mic, and it was real, very intimate, you know what I mean, but even so, like, you get a heavy band, you know, like the Deftones in the Pageant, like, I would much rather see the Deftones at the Pageant, or Incubus at the Pageant, rather than, you know, Verizon or Riverport or whatever.
Yeah, definitely, man, yeah.
So that's...
Well, you want to do another one on here?
Yeah, sure. I guess this song is more, more when it comes to the, you know, reggae vibe, the open kind of worldly feel. Like, this is just one of, you know, completely out of mind, just in hopes for the world, you know, kind of thinking of everybody before myself. So, but this song is called Proof of Purchase. Kids could not go out and play. Hey, how much of
ourselves through before it all comes down and there's nothing left to prove. So if we could just follow these few rules, love yourself just as much as others do, and thank higher spirits for the fact that you love. If only it was more of what we were made of. Well, I don't think you could imagine the idea of a world so pure and clear. And you may say that there's no fixing what's been done. Well, please, someone prove me wrong. Prove me wrong.
Excuse me. Yeah, man, I mentioned Michael Franti.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of, you know, a similar, you know, he's got the reggae influence. He's also very positive and spiritual and, yeah, like, and he writes all about love. And, you know, it's just, it's such a, it's so cool to hear those feel-good songs, man. It's like, I went to see him. I couldn't get anybody to go with me. I saw him at the pageant, and I asked, you know, I was trying to get some friends to go, and nobody wanted to go, and I'm like, screw it, I'm going by myself. I'm not missing this show.
Right.
And, like, man, that was, like, such an incredible experience for me. Like, it was like, you know, it was like going to church or something, you know, like what people would, you know, what, for if you're religious and things, people that experience and things. But for me, like, that was, you know, I'm going to his church, you know.
It's the way you take it in, yeah, for sure. Like, and that's, you know, that is the beautiful thing about a song,
yeah,
is, you know, you can make it really whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I write a lot of songs, like, that song in particular is definitely based on love and, like what can we do? You know, mm-hmm, thinking about everybody. But, I mean, most cases, you know, when I'm thinking about love, like, I'm kind of thinking selfishly.
Yeah.
You know, like, what I want for love, the way I see love, and, you know, and that's, you know, a big thing, or why even, you know, express the One Drops even, is that they showed me a sense, sure, or Aaron Kim himself even, you know, like, with his words, you know, the music is on a whole nother level.
Yeah.
That's a almost untouchable thing, you know, but it was, you know, Aaron Kim's words at the same time were very releasing for me.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, you know, it's, so it is kind of cool, sure, to be like, I really love everything for real, you know, like, these,
yeah,
were questions I grew up just like, like, I felt like I was just in such a weird place in those little towns, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was thinking so much outside the box, but in a tight box.
Yeah.
So it was just all questions, nobody to relate to in those senses. And then finally getting out here, seeing all that stuff,
yeah,
and
man,
just, like...
Yeah, Cam, he's another... Like, that new record they put out, Feed the Meter.
Yes.
Man, just such an incredible album.
Like, oh, yeah.
I've been a fan a long time, but that record, like, really just... You know, took it to a new level for me. Like, I just,
really?
I don't know. I'm a lot more bluesy,
yeah,
kind of,
okay,
taste.
Yeah, so
and
I
that's
can definitely
got a lot more,
yeah,
blues influence. And then having Funky Butt Horns played on it, and
right?
Stuff,
no,
and a couple
on
tracks.
That, yeah, that sense, that is the best thing,
yeah,
for sure. And that is a fun thing about listeners.
Make it better. That's my. That's
my see, if I were to like have to pick one CD. Which I'm sure these guys will listen at some point. So, hi, everybody. But if I were to pick one CD out of that, it would be Bomb the Beast. Because that was, like, to me, the,
sure,
heaviest one. And Rayla could even, you know, like... Not that he would, you know. I don't know how he's seen it. But I know his musical background too, and that to me that CD is just heavy, you know, like for what the one drops are, and it was
definitely, man.
I get it. I like to fucking bang my head, you know, but also dance at the same time.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about some of your tattoos too. You obviously you have quite a few.
Yeah. Yes.
You were showing me some of your Ninja Turtle ones. Yeah. You have almost a half sleeve, I guess, there?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm working on a half sleeve. Yeah. The original movie poster, you know, of them coming, peeking out the sewer. That's my bicep and really my prized tattoo. But also on my, you know, entire right arm is just the things that make me me.
Yeah.
I would say, like, all of the rest of these is all Deftones.
Yes. I think, I don't know who originally said it or whatever, but, you know, like, you know, tattoos and scars, they all, you know, they tell stories and stuff. So
yeah.
I think, I always feel like there's, you know, there's a lot going on, and I don't know, I'm a fan of tattoos. I never had anything that I've, I mean, I love music, obviously, but I've never, there's nothing I've been passionate enough and permanent enough yet to want to put on my body yet, so.
And that's a lot of people question me with, you know, especially the Ninja Turtles. They're like, what? Like, for real? And I'm like, look, I'm 28 years old. Like, if I were in the worst position of my life, like, I could be in the slummest of slums, and you put on a Ninja Turtle movie on in that room, a part of me is going to feel great.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, so, I mean, to me, that is real. Like, that is the realest feel, is whatever makes you, like, happy.
But yeah, man,
these
definitely.
Particular little things, I can just think about, and I'm like, it's like a breath of fresh air, you know?
Is it the original cartoons or the comics or movies?
I mean, I was born in 88, so it was, for me, it was the cartoons, for sure. Like, but it, you know. And, I mean, just as much as any other person in my generation could say, for real, it just does something to me. Like, even the movies, and really on a natural level, like, I hear Ninja Turtles, I'm like, what? You know, like, I'm not even thinking about it, like, so on a completely, like, natural level, it just does something to me that makes me feel comfortable, like, why I have a Ninja Turtle mat on the table right here, like,
I was telling somebody the other night, I just had a, you know, random memory popped up in my brain, and I've had a memory of going, we were talking about Six Flags, and somebody was, my buddy Jeremy said he saw Alice Cooper or something there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alice had like some kind of Halloween ride or whatever, you know, for Fright Fest or something, so he played a concert there. I think it was, I'm pretty sure I got the story. Anyway, something along those lines, but we were talking about Six Flags, and I was like, man, I remember going to see Ninja Turtles there, you know, like.
Are you serious?
Yeah, like it was like.
How old are you?
I'm 31.
31? Yeah, so I'm 28. Like, all right.
So I remember going like.
I was there. Yeah. Like, I was there. Like, Donatello shook my fucking head.
Yeah, man.
Like, what the fuck, dude? Okay. At that time, like, oh my. And that was so funny because I was probably in like kindergarten or first grade at that time, man. Wow.
Yeah, but yeah, so man, awesome. It's stuff like that, like, you know, like that definitely makes a big impact on you. I don't know. People want to say whatever they want to say, like, you know, some of it's silly, but it's like what you're saying. If it makes you happy, like, man, like, whatever. That's my biggest thing. Is like, for me, music makes me happy, and I try to do as much as I can.
Exactly.
If whatever it is that makes you happy, do it, man. But, like, I don't get, like, you know, the people. No sense in shaming somebody over what they're passionate about or what they're nerd over and stuff, you know?
No,
you,
very much. Like,
so, I mean, if I can make fun of you for liking whatever shows you watch or whatever.
See, it's that, like, well, one thing that I would say that makes me an acceptable person on a friend level even is that, excuse me, for real, I'll make fun of myself before really anybody else has a chance. Or, like, I mean, really, if you're making fun of me, like, I'm kind of like, yeah, you're actually kind of right, you know, like, I mean, I take it in, it's just, like, whatever, you know, like, it's, you know, but also, you know, I have a 2-year-old, that, you know, I have to be, like, this stable, you know what I mean, but I'm also, like, just this spark of energy that's, like, really willing and able to do anything that, like, is fun and people are, like, excited about, like,
yeah.
But now I'm a dad, fucking. But which is one of the most beautiful things that's ever happened to me as well. So it's just
she inspire any of these songs yet?
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Actually, I mean, I have a, like, there's one that I'm working on.
Yeah.
And have been working on, like, well, there's one that I wrote that was, like, the first half was before she was born, and the second half was after she was born.
Yeah.
So it was, like, kind of being able to melt both of those worlds, like, the excitement and, like, stress and scaredness at the time, yeah, leading into this crazy, amazing moment that is, like, sure, really is who I am now. You know, without, yeah, my daughter, I don't know who I would be anymore. Like, that's,
sure,
that's what my knuckles say. Yeah. Like, that's the first thing I just, like...
I mentioned seeing Will Hogue on here, mm-hmm, and he's just one of my favorite songwriters. I talk about him all the time on here because I love his stuff. He's just one of my favorite writers, and but I think you, one song in particular I thought of when you were saying all this that I thought you should go listen to is Trying to Be a Man, and he tells a story of him, and I don't know, like, he's such a good writer, like, that they sound like autobiographical, you know, like, yeah, that he's really there, and probably part of him was, but he also writes about song, and that's what, like, people think, like, these are all true stories, and, like, he's, you know, not all of them are true. You know, he writes about other stuff that, and people are like, hey, man, you're singing about your kids, and now you're, like, you know, cheating on the wife, or what, you know, and that kind of stuff,
yeah,
or whatever
it's hard
it is.
To...
But he, you know, he's just so believable. He's just like, man, that's got to be a true story.
Yeah.
But he writes this, Trying to Be a Man, he, you know, the first verse, he's like, you know, he is the scared young kid, you know, mm-hmm, this is his first kid and all this stuff, and he, you know, and he's like, I'm still just trying to be a man. And then, as the, you know, as his son or his child is, he's raising him, he's still trying to be a man and all this stuff,
yeah,
like that. So anyway, it's just a beautiful song, makes you cry, and you should go listen to it.
I will. I will most definitely do that.
But well, yeah, man, I guess we want to make sure we get this out there. We got a date where you can come see Benji. Will you be at Gaslight on October 14th?
Yes, sir.
And these are really cool experience, man. They so Gaslight, if anybody hasn't been over there, they also sponsor my show, which is...
Really?
I love that they're a part of it.
Okay, now I remember you saying that. It was part of the other night.
Yeah. So,
awesome.
But they have been doing a real great thing for the local community, helping out a lot of artists. But they've been doing these, like, songwriter nights.
Songwriter sessions.
Yeah, and, like, where everybody can kind of come in and cut demos and kind of stuff like that. And, like, and this is, the second one on the 14th, right?
Yeah, this will be the second one. I mean, that's what's cool about it is, like, it's a recording session.
Sure.
But it's also, like, a live show.
Yeah.
Anybody can come out. It's a... You know, you can invite whoever, but everybody just watches you through the big room,
yeah,
studio window.
It's a studio attached to a bar, and
yeah,
you're in,
yep,
the studio, and everybody's in the bar watching through the window,
yep,
and it's crazy, but it's awesome, man. Like,
it is, and
the music,
yeah,
the music from the studio is pumped into the bar at, like, a radio volume, and,
yep,
and
When I played, the last time I played, mm-hmm, like, Hillary Fitz, if you're familiar,
yeah,
with her.
Yeah, friend of the show.
She's actually playing Oyster Bar tonight, which I'll probably go check out after this. But, yeah, she, amazing person and voice. Like, listen to her. She played right after me, and it was, like, cool, you know. Like, I didn't know how to take it that first time, you know, sitting there playing, like, whatever. Like looking around, like, okay, just tell me when to play, you know. And then she gets up there, and she's like... Oh, well, this song's about this, and then just fucking kills it, you know.
Right.
But also, like, hearing it in the bar, like, you don't really know what they're how they're hearing it when you're playing it, and then,
yeah.
So it is cool, man. It's such a fun experience, like,
sure,
just a three, you know, a little 15-minute of fame,
yeah,
and
Joe,
you get a recording of it too.
Joe Bozzelli was there also.
Yes,
and
yes.
Anthony Doria, was he?
Yep. Which are both?
Yeah.
Or Anthony Doria. Met through Hillary, good friend. Joe, I just met.
Those guys are all
great
friends of the show.
Oh, awesome. Well,
yeah.
Shout out to those guys,
yeah,
for sure. That's what's up.
Trying to work my way around town, get all these guys on there. So.
You slut.
Yeah. Actually, Anthony's, man, people ask me, like, a lot when my favorite episode is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have a lot of them. They're
so what's your favorite episode?
Well, Anthony was probably the one that, like, comes to mind a lot just because it was such a cool thing. But we did we sat over at I think it was Jackson's house or something. Man, Jackson Howard, Anthony Doria, and Drew Lance. And Roy Butler also set in. When, but we did like a song swap kind of thing between Jackson and Anthony, and Drew played Cajon. And we sat for like an hour and a half on the back porch, and you can hear like all the bugs and all the stuff going. Like we're out in the middle of fall evening and stuff, and it was just like such a cool thing. But the highlight, I thought, for me, so we did the whole thing, and he recorded a song, Jackson did, and you can hear all the, like I said, all these bugs. And then, like, when he went and did his record, and you can all, like, they, I guess in post or whatever, they added all these, like, bug sound effects on his album, too.
Yeah.
So I thought that was, like, super cool. I don't think I had a part of it, but, like...
But being there.
Yeah, but just, yeah. Like... Just knowing that, like, my recording was almost pretty close to his studio record, you know? Like,
yeah,
you know, like,
no, so. That's totally... Dude, that's a very connectful... Like,
yeah, it was...
I mean, that's like Mickey Mantle being my fourth cousin. Right, you know what I mean? Like, sure. It's not like I go hang out with the guy or anything, even though he died in 97, but still, it's like...
Yeah. But yeah, man. So, check out Benji on October 14th over at the Gaslight. It's right on the corner of Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard on the hill. I don't know if they're open on Sunday then, but
the last time I played was on a Sunday night, so I would assume that they're open on Sundays.
Well, I was thinking I was going to plug Cha Cha Chow next door too.
Oh yeah,
I was going to say Hungry, but I'm not positive they'll be open.
I ate when they, because I mean it's like a separate place, but they have the menu there over at Gaslight. Yeah. So I mean, it's basically they might as well just cut the wall out and just do it all at once. You know?
Yeah, Cha Cha Chow's right next door. If you're hungry, come get some tacos.
Yes,
enjoy the show. But we're going to close this out. We got one more for you.
Yeah.
What's this one, man?
This song is called To Be Real. It's probably one of my slowest songs, to be honest, but to me is the most, like, impactful, I feel. Yeah. Like, I just, it's the most realist that I could make myself, I guess, if I were to lay it out like that.
And switch to the ukulele on this
one. Yeah, my ukulele. Yes, yeah, so... Yeah, to be real. Thank you.
to find, 'cause it's a brand new me, a whole new design. Yes, it's taking time, while so much has went to waste. I just know when I look in those eyes, I get lost in outer space. 'Cause what I see and what I feel, it's all that I need to be real. Yes, I said that all that I see and all
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.